odds to spiral forth sane, reverent common sense, intellectual honesty, and fair play, and invoke the helpful beloved dead at this time of dire beauty. So welcome, Micah.
Hello, I am here.
That's wonderful. Oh, and again, it's sounding good. It's sounding good. And welcome, Max. Are you there?
Oh, good.
Hello? Hello, team? Hello, is Max there? Hello?
No, uh-oh. She's not. We're still trying to get her on. She'll be on soon.
Okay, so Max will be on very soon. But, okay, Micah, let us set forth. That is wonderful. So just to inform people, I love that on Election Day, Mercury will be at 7 Sagittarius, whose image is in the cauldron of the earth, new metals are forming. And we go, ooh, that's good.
So that, oh, I love that.
That tosses it to your alchemical self. So I thought we could brew some election elixir today on the radio.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. If there's ever a moment that we need help as a collective, then elections are it every time, and most especially this time.
Yes, and I'm just working with the backstage engineers. Just make sure, can you hear me? Yes, can the listeners hear me? We hope so. But you had been saying because I'm not getting a feed. But you were saying also about Mercury, right? Gathering our wits, Mercury and Hermia.
Yes, yes. I got thinking about Mercury actually when I was thinking about what plants I work with this time of year, and vervain is one of them. Verbena, vervain, and it's a really wonderful traditional herb. It's used in a lot of different ways for healing, but it's also a druidic and a magical herb from lots of different cultures, and it's primarily used to contact what's called the beloved dead. And interestingly also, in Egypt, they considered it sacred for much the same reason. They believe it sprung from the tears of Isis as she mourned Osiris. So it's very much about that connection with those who we love who have gone away. And it's one I really like to work with this time of year. And I first started doing that a number of years ago. And it was a new herb that we were working with. And so whenever we're going to extract a plant, I'll spend a week, 2 weeks just chewing on the plant all the time to kind of get to know it before we even take it into the lab. And I was doing that and working with it. And I started having dreams every night that I was in the house of my childhood and every pet I had ever had was there with me. Mm-hmm. And it was puzzling, you know. It was like, oh, that was really wonderful. I was playing with Sally Cat again, and all. And then I realized, oh, that's my beloved dead, you know, coming back to me. That's who's gone before. That's who I loved and who I'm connected with. And so it's a really interesting herb in that way to help you connect with those energies. And as I said, it's used in a number of different ways, and it can be processed in a number of different ways depending on what you want it for. But we work with it as a mercury herb because of that psychopomp quality, because of that connecting the underworld to our world quality that mercury really carries.
Right. Well, one of the themes of right now is that the moon in Leo, whose image is quest, camel crossing the desert, is setting in the west in California, squaring Jupiter and Scorpio, which is Inca princess pleads for the life of her children. And so we think that, you know, our two guests, Max will be joining us soon, may it be so, you know, and you certainly, Micah, who carry so much needed lore from the past, the dead, our woofy women ancestresses, convening out of dedicated concern that we protect as much life as possible, having carelessly killed 60% of Earth's mammals. So because we were speaking backstage about our beloved black cats, you know, and
yes,
our beloved wolf dogs and Stella Coyote, and, you know, again, this Day of the Dead, right, where the veils are thin, and it extends all the way through the election, because the election takes place at the dark of the moon, right, before the new moon. And the new moon will be November 7th, which is true Halloween, exact mid-season. So this dark
is,
of the moon.
It is, it's so in, yeah.
Yeah, well, it is, yeah, so we're inviting, you know, all the wise guiding and all the animals and everybody back. I love this image right now, too, going, we need all protecting life woofiness, you know, invited in to this realm. And so has the vervain been helping you to feel calmer?
It is a bit of a nervine also. It's a nice calming tonic, which is nice, and that's also one of the properties of herbs of Mercury. A lot of them are very classically not sedatives like the Mooney herbs are, but actually tonifying and calming to the nerves so that you can be steady and effective. I think about... Because different planets have overlap, you know, in really interesting ways. So with Moon, we have a lot of sedatives. We sleep. It's nighttime. It's Moony. Mercury, I think of the juggler, right? You have to be very collected and very calm to juggle. You're not asleep. You're not sedated. It's dynamic and it's moving, but you're also very calm and collected. And I think that's what these Mercury, you know, like vervain and those sort of herbs offer, a way of being very sharp and very clear, but not frenetic. And it looks chaotic, but it's not, you know, and that back and forth slippery quality is a really useful thing to think about.
And speaking of an embodiment of calm, lucid clarity, our great ally, Max Dashu, is with us. Welcome, Max.
Hi, Caroline. I'm just loving this about vervain. I just want to go get some to chew right now.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's very bitter. I will warn you. That's okay.
Bitter
herbs. Old women suck on bitter roots, you know?
I like bitter. I think it's really good for you.
Excellent. Because I remember it from New Orleans. It's a big vervain, you know, in all the apothecaries there, and it keeps moths away and stuff. And has this wonder, yeah. So, absolutely. So we are brewing our election, dark of moon, new moon, true Halloween elixir. This hour really, you know, throwing drops in, because I like to say the protoplasm of reality is especially receptive to imaginative imprint now and election day. So two of my favorite women in the world, keepers of such great knowledge, and I do encourage everyone to go to their websites for a long time. It's really rich. But so as we journey together this hour, you know, think of, you know, two drops of this and three drops of that. So we have the vervain for steady and effective. How are you feeling, Max? Are you feeling pretty calm and dedicated?
Yes. Well, you know, it's interesting. This is such a moment of intersecting times, like you say, the portal of Samhain. And so there's this whole calling in of ancestors, and then we are in this moment like no other, really, because this is the time. This is a crucial crux of time now with this election. And so, you know, one of the things that I'm seeing is calling in all the ancestral beings, because they're all with us. They know what is at stake. You know, and all of the heritages, all of the lineages, all of the beings have to be on board with us for the protection of earth and water and life. And, you know, that's all at stake now. You know, there's no more time, really, to, you know, things have to move. And so we have to really stand at that portal and call those forces in with us. Because I think a lot of people are confused and, you know, in frantic states. You know, so much is going on, and calmness, if I'm not there, may I be there soon, you know, is the affirmation, is to be centered. And when you were talking about the Mercury herbs, the word that came to my mind was attunement, you know, the way that Mercury is able to bridge between, you know, and so you attune to the highest form or the deepest form of that energy and allow that Mercuric power to enable us to communicate, because I think so much of this is around communication and reaching people's hearts and minds.
Beautiful.
It is. And, you know, when I was thinking about Mercury and tricksters, you know, in particular earlier, I was thinking, it came to mind the story of Eshu, the Yoruba trickster. And one day he decides he's going to go walking through a village, and he's wearing a hat that's red on one side and black on the other side. And depending on which side of the street you're on, you see one color or the other. And everyone gets in a big argument about it, and war breaks out over this whole thing. And then Eshu returns and explains. And I feel like screaming at each other from opposite sides of the road about what color the trickster's hat is like the metaphor for right now. And if somebody had just walked into the middle of that road and said, look, it's both. Wow, dude really got us there. You know, there could be a communication going on there. And you know, Mercury being that go-between, like you said, Max, that connection. In the spagyric work that we do, the spirit is Mercury, and the spirit is in the spirit. We ferment something, and that's what allows that spirit of the plant to rise up out of that breakdown. And we break down one plant, and we use that to extract another plant. So there is that go-between idea there, too, that Mercury connects us, whether it's tincturing or communication or travel. It's all about connecting.
Beautiful. Yeah, and the trickster element is important because, you know, I think a lot of this, the manipulation of perception has been such a theme, especially in these last mm-hmm. 2 years. Something that we are going to have to brew for the purpose of the sacred, you know, how to derail the way that manipulation has been carried out.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And a lot of these Mercury herbs, vervain, tulsi is another really classic herb of Mercury. Mm. A lot of these can be used to either conjure spirits and create magic, even dark magic against people, but they're also used to protect from magic too. And I think that's one of the lessons of the energy of Mercury. It's in how you use it and what you use it for that makes it good or bad, useful or not.
Do you have anything, because I remember reading, I think it's from Pliny or maybe it's Julius Caesar, talking about the Druids, and vervain was the herb that they esteemed the most highly.
They did, and also for that same protection and conjuring kind of dichotomy, they would use it to make what they called a lustral water, which is just a great word right there. They would wash their altars with it because it was protective, but they also used it in divination for conjuring. So you'd use a tea of it as a reflective surface for scrying, and then also mm-hmm. drinking it for that connection, again, to the beloved dead or the other realms of things. And then you could also just use it in a more simple way, wreaths of it or so forth, or a water of it on your threshold to protect your home from bad conjuring coming from someone else.
That brings in... Go ahead.
No, I just said, or you can protect your home or your nation from bad conjuring.
Mm-hmm. Which is also the home, mm-hmm. yeah. Yeah. There's two other herbs that come to my mind in relation to Samhain, All Hallows, and one of them is mm-hmm. yarrow. That was used mm-hmm. a lot in divinatory ways. Of course, we know about casting the I Ching with yarrow stalks in China, but way over in Scotland, it was also an important plant for divination rites around All Hallows. And young women divining who their future husband would be wound up being the last little chunk that remained of what would have been much more broad area of investigation and culture. And the other herb I think about is mugwort or the Artemisia family. Because I don't know, on Beltane, which is the opposite cross-quarter holiday to Samhain, mugwort was very much up. It was one of the nine herbs. Each culture had maybe a variation on this, but mugwort and St. John's wort were always in the mix on Beltane for making mm-hmm. garlands and also casting the wreaths of the previous year into the fire. And I imagine it also, mugwort in particular, because it does have this very ancestral quality to it, as being something that would also be useful at All Hallows. And, you know, today being All Hallows Day, and I think about it especially in regard, again, to this attunement aspect and for that which throws out all negativity. You know, that's how mm-hmm. it's used in three continents. The Chinese have it in that way, both medicinally and also, you know, the smudging with mugwort sticks, and the Europeans using mugwort for smudging also. And then in North America, the Artemisia family, desert sage, was used in that same way. They were all to clear out, you know, afflictive negative charges. So that's a plant that we can work with.
To see that you see, like mugwort is the same person, as it were, to every culture that encounters it, because that's what it has to offer. And I find that really interesting too. And mugwort is considered the herb of travelers. Because it grows along roadsides. And I don't know if you've ever walked anywhere at night where there's a lot of mugwort, the mm-hmm. undersides of the leaves are silver, and it'll mm-hmm. catch the moonlight in a way that shows you the road. almost like this reflective kind of, you know, like reflective road paint, only it's mugwort. And so it's the herb of travelers in a more subtle way as well. It protects you through astral travel or flight or magical travel, things like that, to keep you connected by that silver cord back to yourself so you can come back again, and also to keep you protected. And there's a few mercury herbs that are used that way. I mentioned tulsi a moment ago. That's an Ayurvedic herb, and it's a basil. It's a holy basil, and it's planted around temples in India because it's believed negativity can't pass it. And interestingly enough, a very closely related basil is used in South America during ayahuasca rituals. If the ritual starts to get dark and the communications start to get not as useful, it'll be used as a splash in a flower water to kind of bring things back. So again, protecting the traveler idea there.
You know, the Germans call it Beifuß, by the foot. And they would actually put it in their shoes for travel. So it's actually releasing its esters, you know, from the warm sweat of your feet. And it's believed to be, you know, a protector in that way, too.
And then it's probably absorbing up through your feet.
Which is a great idea.
Can you all hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, good. I was getting a delay. Engineering. Mercury coming in. Mercury. Because isn't mugwort also a dream herb that you
inhale? Yes, the dream pillow idea. Yes.
Right.
Although, you know, a lot of the dream pillow recipes that I saw in the 70s, they had you putting cloves in, which is kind of like not going to make for a restful sleep. But, yeah.
No, that would keep
it definitely
away.
Has that dreaming power. Yeah. You know, too hot.
And that traveler idea, that's mercury again, the psychopomp, the being that is, you know, silvery in all places at once, and he can go to another realm and see what's useful there and bring it back here, and he's either and both. He's not one or the other kind of quality to him. We see that a lot in these very mercurial herbs.
And when we really need that adaptivity right now, you know, the ability to move quickly in response. And not only in reaction, but, you know, really to respond with that intelligence of mercury, that quicksilver intelligence.
So what might you both suggest that people put in their shoes as they go to vote?
Well, you know,
mugwort would be good. I think tulsi would be really good so that you're coming from a positive place. And it also smells really nice, and it's very generous with its scent. If you put a bit of it in your shoe, your whole being will smell like that. And so it'll be the more positive impulses coming through, which, you know, from either side of the aisle, it's easy to get carried away with negative reasons to vote a certain way or think a certain way. So, you know, bringing in more positive reasons for what you're going to do can't hurt.
Oh, and certainly adding Saturn to it, and Saturn right now is, and at the election, it's arrived at the degree where it will be on election day, and whose image is 10 logs lie in front of an archway leading to darker woods. And we go, okay, we're going there. And it's got a beautiful connectivity to the sun today at 9 Scorpio. I was speaking with Max about this backstage, because 9 Scorpio is I think it's the secret soul of this country. It's like if we look at the back of a $100 bill and see the clock tower there with a specific time and do a chart for America with that time, it gives 9 Scorpio rising, whose image is a fellowship supper reunites old comrades. And we go, that's the vision of this country we want to hold, one of welcoming and solace and refuge and, you know, embrace. And so today is the secret soul of America. Neptune trines it. And that's really what we want to rise up in every heart, to overcome the cruelty and polarity, right, as part of our elixir and part of what we choose to see. And then Saturn just adds in that, you know, vote and devote, you know, regardless of, there's some great candidates and some good enough candidates, because the Democrats taking the House, no matter what one's grumpy progressive attitude is really important, because it means that Trump laws cannot be passed. You know, there's a Saturn binding.
Yes, well, don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good in this case, you know? I mean, nobody is perfect, but there's people who are better than others.
And there's so much at stake. This is really important. There's so much at stake.
And the magic
Kavanaugh.
Oh, yes. We'll come back. Yes, I call him Kavanaugh bin Salman. But it's because all, you know, Saturn says, you know, the ritual magic is simply any physical thing we do that we imbue with dedicated symbolism. So there's the voting, and then for each person in their heart to go by the casting of this vote, may it be that, you know, sane reverence awakened, mm-hmm. that, you know, things are that no matter what chicanery is planned, that the living voting booths themselves rebel and will only cast forth truth, no matter how they're rigged to change votes, that they rebel. I think it's, you know, full-on experimental animistic whimsy time, right?
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah.
I was listening to a podcast the other day, and they were exploring the idea of, is witchcraft a viable response to our political times? I'm like, absolutely.
Yeah, right, well, you know, it's this old saying from Malcolm X, by any means necessary. And at that point, he was really referring to picking up the gun, and that was the politics of the 70s. But I think our current interpretation of that is that the vote is also one of those many means that we have to bring in. It's not that we think that it's the answer to everything, or even that it's an expression of our own political ideas, but just, you know, first off, on the level of harm reduction alone, there's a strong reason for doing that, you know. And then mm-hmm. there's some very interesting things happening. Like, I just was listening this morning, Oprah Winfrey came down to Georgia to campaign for Stacey Abrams. May she win. And it was, she gave the most inspiring, wonderful speech. And so let that be loft under the wings, that all these people will be turning out that haven't voted before. You know, the youth and the alienated voters and the people who thought it didn't really make any difference. You know, that they will come out, and we can get a boost also for Beto O'Rourke in Texas, yes. because it's very yes. close, you know, and he could win. But, you know, we, right. we need that collective will and that optimism that says we can do it. You know, we can make it. We can make a shift. You know, people really mm-hmm. need to have that faith, because everyone has felt so discouraged and powerless and trampled down. And yet there is this rustling and this shift in the wind, you know, because the desire of the earth and all these beings is really there. You know, for this to change, you know, we need that change.
And that's a really important point, because Venus has just retrograded back into Libra, and she's getting ready to reemerge, right, on election day before dawn. She's not spending too much time in the underworld. She's back, but her image as she rises, if we were to get up before dawn, on election day, we would see this beautiful thing, the heliacal rise of Venus, that all cultures would have watched, like, oh, she's back, with the moon. And the Venus-Moon conjunction was part of where each Venus-Moon conjunction is where she reclaims something conditioned that she'd left behind. So this is that beauty and justice and art reassume its cultural leadership dynamic. But in reference to what you said, Max, is her image as she rises with Ceres, Demeter, goddess of the earth, is a person in deep gloom, unnoticed, a glowing circle of angels surrounds them. So it's speaking to us to overcome futility and gloom in our aloneness, but step out and the glowing circle of angels surrounds them, creating bus services for all those, you know, in Dodge to get to their remote voting booth in Siberia from Dodge City, Kansas. And, you know, that Uber and Lyft, you know, befoibled though they be, they're offering free rides. And, you know, we want to see a triumphant, you know, resounding turnout, you know, against all of this chicanery and creepiness, but that we not be, you know, in alone, deep gloom. It's like, no, go out, be part of the glowing circle of angels, overcome the disaffectedness. You know, this is really important. There we go.
Yes, let the wave arise. Let this great wave arise and astonish everyone with its spiritual power. You know, the inspiring.
And that alone, deep gloom place, it is a really easy place to get into if you're looking at global stuff. You know, it is really tough. And I think about where we live is very small. There's about 450 people where we live. And as we've talked about backstage, global communications often go down for us, internet, phone, that sort of thing. But since there's only a few people there, we all know personally each other. We all know what everybody is up to, if not the greater world. And I feel like if we could all approach the greater world sort of in that way, it might be a little bit more useful. I remember a couple of years ago, the day after Election Day, the news on the internet was dire and horrible and dark and bad, and it is all of those things, certainly, and I'm not saying put your head in the sand, but I made more friends that day locally than I had in the years we had been here before, because everybody suddenly felt like we had to be closer. Suddenly felt like, you know, you've been shopping here for months and I don't know your name. And it was that sort of thing. And it reminds me, you know, the idea of communication and community are the same root words. And if we can just try to communicate with each other as if we're all in the same little town, even when we're not, I think that's a very helpful way to connect with other people and to just think about our connections with others that way.
True. And here's another piece, because Scorpio, since we have so many planets moving through Scorpio and Venus just popped or about to pop out of it, is the sign of collective resources. You know, if Taurus is your personal, then Scorpio is the collective. The collective wealth would be the classical way of talking about it, but it's all resources. And so there's this way of joining together, and it also has the side of bringing to light that which has been hidden.
Mm. Yes. And that's something
good.
Say, may anything we need to know to have a democracy be revealed, you know, and if it's bad, rendered harmless, and in the fullness of time be an occasion for mirth. But we go back to the Celtics, who thought that only satire could bring down the power-abusing tyrant. And so we like the spiciness, and we like sucking the chi out of tyranny, and we like, you know, wishing all well, because we are friends of everyone's soul. We're therefore friends of their indictment and accountability, you know, and it's not good. It's not good for anybody to get away with tyranny. So we want to cool that out. And I don't know how I think about this ritual. You know, it's from Centuria. I do. It is witty. Late great Centero friend said, you know, all ritual is literalized metaphor. And so he said, if somebody's abusing power, you write their name on a piece of paper and you put it in an ice cube tray and you put it in the freezer to cool them out. And I think it's witty. It might need a little refining. I'm not sure. But with the fierce blessing, may those abusing power be moved to a place they can no longer harm themselves by harming others. Whoosh! You know, and if we get to spiral that out. Is that in in affinity or in accord with you, Max?
Well, you know, I've heard a lot of African American women who practice the old ways use that spell. You know, what it brings up for me, and this was something I was thinking about talking about today, is out of the Carmina Gadelica, which are Scottish folk chants that Alexander Carmichael gathered together. He's talking about this in the context of healing, but you know, he's describing saning charms, which means to bless or to heal. And they invoke natural forces, and so it goes, power of moon, of sun, of rain. And they cast out sickness, or we could even talk about a cultural toxicity in that context, into the vastness of nature, which could easily absorb and neutralize it. And so the chant goes, a part of thee on the gray stones, the steep mountains, the swift cascades, apart on the great surging sea, she herself has best means to carry. And so, you know, it's like it's allowing the currents of the natural order to dissolve the toxicity and the knots and the traumas. And rather, I mean, that's my preference, rather than trying to act on a specific person in that way.
Right.
Is to make an affirmation which undoes the knotted energies and you know, like you say, for the good of that person's ultimate soul too, but certainly for the maybe the salvation of everyone else in the meantime, you know, allow this continued tyranny, you know. And so
right,
you
release it. I love that. No, because I knew when I was saying it that there's something not quite right, it's witty, but I love the saning charms, which are really great. So we're going to take a very tiny, short musical Taj Mahal break, but our wonderful guests this hour are Micah Nielsen, alchemy.com, alchemi.com. She can explain that. And wonderful Max Dashew, suppressedhistories.net. I'm Caroline Casey, and we will be right back after this very short break.
Shook the constellations that dazzled them. closed his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled him, closed his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Indigo skyship, make his voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So our wonderful guests, as we do Day of the Dead election radio, brewing our election elixir that we can become agents of democratic animism at this time of dire beauty. Micah Nielsen, website, yes. al-qemi.com, and wonderful, both wonderful, Max Dashew, suppressedhistories.net, both websites worthy of deep delving. But I do love you. You have liberated me, Max, because I knew there was something about that charming, you know, put things in the ice cube tray that is kind of witty, but you're exactly right. You know, because it's like when we throw things into the cauldron at different rituals, you know, we don't throw proper names in, we don't throw people, we throw, you know, tyranny and then ladle out liberty. And so I do love the saning charms, and that's very much in accord with you too, Micah, right? The saning charms, let nature do it.
Yeah, and it reminds me of one of the formulas that we make that is really helpful for these kind of energies and this kind of workings is our surrender formula. So just letting go of things. We call it the get out of your own way remedy, which, you know, works very well personally. But if we think about our country as a person, we are kind of getting in our own way right now. And one of the really key herbs in there is one called Voa Conga. And this is a really classic herb of Saturn. It's such a Saturnine herb. It's related to Iboga, which is used as a ritual herb also in Africa. It's not as strong as Iboga, but it carries a similar energy. And it's used at the cusp of childhood and adulthood to let go of childish things, as they say. And it's also, it's a little bit crony. It's a little bit Saturn-y. It can be a little bit harsh, but it really helps you let go of things that just aren't serving you. And if you hold on too hard, it gets a little bit rude in the way it helps you let go of things. So it all kind of depends upon your attachment to things. But it's an excellent herb for just, no, be done with that thing. Let go of it. Let it be gone. It's not helping you. Maybe there's nothing wrong with that thing. We're not going to say it's evil. We're just going to say it doesn't help us and send it on its way. And it's a really good herb for that. That discernment of Saturn, of like, this is good for me, this is not, this is mine, this is not mine.
Wonderful.
Well, and Saturn is so powerful now in Capricorn, it's in its own sign, so there's something really, a lot of potential to work with that.
No, that's great.
Yes, you and know, I'm again, here representing that. I'm all Capricorn all the time, so.
I'm Capricorn rising. And also in the Botanical Preservation Corps from years ago, I remember reading in their catalog that Voa Conga was, African, but given to hunting dogs to sharpen their senses and to older people to increase their hearing and sight. I'm like, you know, give me that thing. Mm-hmm. You know, even if you just ate a dust ball and read the description, it would help. We go, that's great. And see, it's also perfect, our convening. I do love this so much, because Pallas Athena, an actual little asteroid, her where she is today is the images in a cave overhung with twisted roots. A seeker pours over the glowing pages of an alchemical illuminated manuscript. And we go, oh, it's a perfect convening, isn't it? For the likes of
it
yourselves
is.
And ourselves and dedicated listeners. And Michael, maybe you could remind us also, you know, alchemy, you say that the word comes from Egypt.
It does, yes. It's alchem, and chem, K-H-E-M, is how you kind of westernize it, was the old name for Egypt, and it means blackness. And it refers to the soil that the Nile would drop there every year with its flooding, beautiful, black, fertile soil. So it means out of the blackness. And then there becomes deeper meanings of that, too, that, you know, I talked earlier about the fermentation that lets the spirit rise. You know, putrefaction is used in our work a lot, too, and everything goes through a process of black, white, yellow, red. And that's kind of the process of things maturing. And black is always the first part of it. And it's black and it's stinky. But what comes out of that is, you know, the fertility along the side of a river, the alchemical preparation that you made once you took everything and putrefied it and brought it back together again. And so, you know, out of this blackness, this beautiful thing can come if you just nurture that growth and that new life that's fermenting out of it.
Hmm. So in our elixir, in our election elixir that we're brewing or inspiring other people to put things into it, to put things in your shoe when you go to vote, put things in your heart. To,
yes.
You know, so fermentation, yes, put some sauerkraut in your shoe. No, maybe not. But, you know, kombucha. Yeah, but how might, I'm sorry, say what?
Sounds legit. Sure, why not?
Right. But how might we play with the witty kitchen magic of women, you know, in the fermentation? I know that, you know, in making the ancestor altar and the election altar and so on, and the micro to the macro, you know, that one way I was taught that, you know, in also convening groups, I remember convening a group and making a little backstage altar to it, and I knew that there were some grumpy people coming, and so I put little drops of honey on the rocks that represented them to sweeten their hearts, and people really did say, God, I've never been this nice in a group before. But anyway, so it's just kind of witty poetry, and in that spirit of fermentation, should we put something bubbling on our altar, or what do you both think might be witty and playfully effective?
I have bubbling things all over my house, so I'm fine with any of it. And something I have noticed that people can play with at home, and it doesn't even have to be anything specific, but anything that you ferment, if you add medicinal herbs to that, they are empowered like 100-fold. It's really an amazing thing that I've played with, adding just a single drop of something to a whole big bottle of fermenting kefir, and the whole thing tastes like it's nothing but that plant. I've played with rose that way and clary sage, and something about that fermentation I think really activates even very tiny amounts of a medicinal substance. So whatever ferment you're into, think about throwing some medicinal drops or medicinal herb into that, and the life of that ferment will wake it up even more.
I love that. And
still,
I always love to...
I'm still back with iboga and that you brought up, because, you know, there is, it's like, from what I understand, and I've never had the pleasure of trying it, maybe too hot of an herb for me, I don't know, but is that this way that there is like this deep alchemical release in the being of forms, you know, it's like everything in our lives, it's like we get magnetized, things build up over time, and we become, like in the Hindus call it kleshas, you know, the clingings, the ideas we're attached to, and the ways that we become contracted around a certain idea of self. And so, like, you know, famously, iboga really has been used a lot to treat people who have fallen into addiction, because they're so fixated on that one substance that will somehow solve their pain. And so it takes you deeper into this dreaming of your true being at the core. And I think that there's a way that needs to happen for all of us for our ultimate healing individually. And there's another way, which is, of course, more difficult to attain because collective, on the level of country or culture. You know, that's what Caroline calls the composting of things and the release of them into their ultimate nature. You know, and even the Chinese Buddhists talk about this. You know, what was your original face before birth? And because we live in a consumer society, everything is being leveraged by, you know, the powers that control media to go against that liberatory impulse and to try and manipulate people's feelings. And their rage currently is being manipulated to a great degree. But, you know, one of our deeper assignments is to figure out how to achieve a cooperative release of that on the collective level, as well as what we have to, I mean, I think first we all have that individual level we have to address in order to even be capable of doing it on a collective level. But then again, we learn while doing, you know, and I think it's all a process of revelation, you know, in these attempts of people to gather together and create a coalitionary culture of change.
And since we're
the
kind of...
Yeah, and the yoga is very powerful. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Oh, sorry. No, we have a lag, but that's okay. But I just wanted to bring up the oboga again, which I have done, and it's a long, deep thing. But I think, you know, even little micro imaginative homeopathic vapors that we want to waft out into the world, because it has a long tradition, and but it does proffer calm, compassionate lucidity, in which you just gaze at people you know and things and go, ah, so that's how that is. And you see what needs healing without any reactivity, just with a deep knowing. And it also takes one to the, or everybody's got a slight different thing, but to the center of all stories. You know, it's like there were 4, 5, 20 stories all going on at once, incredibly visual, more visual than anything we see in front of our eyes right now. And it was given to leaders before they were inaugurated, which I think is a really good idea, because it does in a very profound, intense way bring up all of one's befoiblements, but in a very kind way. And when the visuals start to subside, one can feel oneself, and this is what you were referencing also, the addiction thing and how it can clean out the psychological impetus and the physical drugs that people have been addicted to. It feels like a dolphin scanning one's whole system, going, okay. Yeah, so wafting a little bit of that out. And then I also, just for our election telepathic brew, I love Paul Stamets reminding us that the tradition, and also the latest Johns Hopkins, say that psilocybe mushrooms increase confidence and kindness and cooperation among the other regions of the brain while calming down the amygdala, which is the scanning for fear thing. And as he said, those are leadership qualities. And we go, right, so a little homeopathic dose of maybe iboga and maybe the psilocybes for everybody, confident, kind leadership wafting out there and cooperation among other regions of the brain. And all of us together, all the dedicated listeners and our two beautiful guests, Michael Nielsen and Max Dashew, that we waft out that into the memosphere, which calms down the amygdala, right? So may it be that people are no longer controlled by fear mongering, like, and however you might want to phrase that in another way.
Well, yeah,
Max,
And I have a thought about the iboga too. Actually, you know, it is a very powerful herb, as you know, you've worked with it, and you can take a little bit less of it. I think it's a really great herb for getting rid of very serious addictions, you know, heroin and so forth. That's what it's used for. But the herb that I mentioned earlier, Voa Conga, it's related, but it's gentler. And so I think it's a nice ally, because not many of us as humans, too many, but not many, are addicted to heroin, opiates, things like that. And those people need very, very strong medicine. But I would say a lot of us are addicted to thought patterns that don't help us. Many of us do that. And the Voa Conga is excellent for that. When we were first working with it, again, you know, back to how I just kind of chew on things every day for a little while to get to know it before we do any extraction of it. We've been doing this for a long time. We've seen this before. This was back in the terrifying Bush years. Remember that, Caroline?
Mm-hmm.
And I was chewing on the Voa Conga and meditating with it and sitting with it. And Paul came in and told me something he had just seen on the news, some horrifying thing that George Bush had just done. And I felt my mind start spinning out into this place of fear and reaction and panic and hatred. And then I saw how I didn't have to do that. And it was the Voa Conga speaking to me, saying, you don't have to do that. That's up to you or not up to you. You can do it. You can not do it. It's not super useful, so you might want to consider letting it go. And so I did. And I think it's a very good herb for letting go of those kinds of addictions that maybe aren't quite as severe as the addictions the iboga would address, but more common in our society and probably more useful to get rid of in that way.
Yeah, and not only addictions, but not knowing how to do differently.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't spin off into reactive fear, then what? Then what's possible?
Yeah.
You know, and that's a process of discovery to see what can move there instead.
Yeah, yeah, and it really shows you those patterns. There's very much, and that's, I think that's a Saturn kind of thing too, the idea of patterns and structure, and here, look, it's the structure of your mind, but your mind could be structured this other way. Let's try that instead. And then an interesting kind of so-in All Hallows kind of side note, working with both Voa Conga and Iboga, just the flowers instead of the root, which is what's traditionally used, the flowers are used to see the dead ancestors. So again, you know, they want to help us. They're trying very hard to help us.
Right. The teacher plants. And then to both of you, to animate, you know, this election is at the dark of the moon, right? Which has many, you know, the backstage divinatory is an equal opportunity profferer. So I think of the dark of the moon as traditionally when people would gather to determine the course of culture in a desirable way. But it is also the time, dark of moon, when chicanery happens, you know, as sneaky stuff. So to both of you, maybe Max first, you know, how would you like to guide us with the Voa Conga and teaching plants speaking through you as well, you know, to think of this dark of the moon, you know, November 6th, dark of the moon, so much fluctuating. Uranus changes signs, the moon changes signs. But how do you think of a desirable way to cooperate with the dark of the moon?
Yes. So what I would go to immediately is, again, this idea of dissolution of toxic structure, because it's an undoing time. Yeah. But it's also a visionary time because, you know, in undoing and releasing really, you know, so much of the toxins we're dealing with are not individual. They're cultural. They're cultural systemic spells. They're cultural spells that we have to uncast, right? So the uncasting, the unwinding of that is very much a dark of the moon activity. But the dark of the moon is also a supreme time of vision questing. And, you know, very much like the menstrual cycle, which corresponds to the dark of the moon, and that idea of going into retreat in some way and seeking new insight. It's like the wisdom that comes out of the darkness. And, you know, we can affirm that that wisdom will arise within people, you know, within their own darkness, you know, and be able to motivate them as a moment of change, as a moment of releasing those patterns. And you know, we really could use the as a collective to hear the news of a rising up, of people coming out of their goodness, out of their hearts and saying, you know, we love the Jewish communities of Pittsburgh and we love the immigrants coming across the borders and we love women, whatever group has come under attack, you know, an affirmation of this is not what we want to see done in our name, you know, and a rising up to happen, you know. But in this case, with it all happening in the dark of the moon, it's a reconfiguration, which is possible in that time of dissolution, you know, reconfiguration of the patterns that have prevailed up till now.
Beautiful. Well, because another way to think of it, you know, to you both, is it's a quirky available for cooperating day, in which Uranus, trickster nature's evolutionary genius, retrogrades back into Aries in the middle of the day on the East Coast, and you know, and the moon also changes sign early in the morning, enters Scorpio, so both of them go back into Mars signs, and to both of you. You know, positive Mars, right? Because this is part of the template, you know, strong enough to be gentle Mars, hero Mars, you know, to animate the desirable. But what are maybe Micah first, but what are some positive Mars, Chango, you know, positive Yang within all of us, and, you know, and an honoring of that in the world too, positive leadership, positive Yang. What are some thoughts or plants that support that?
There's two main plants that I think of as positive Mars. I think the first one that really comes to mind for me is Devil's Club. And we've talked about Devil's Club before. It's an herb of the Northwest, and it's related to ginseng. It tastes kind of like ginseng. And it is a gnarly, gnarly being. Oh, goodness, it's covered in spines. It's so defended. And it grows in the old-growth forest, and it grows in communities. The plants are linked together. And the Northwest Native people considered the defender of the forest. And they felt that about it long before we arrived and with our chainsaws. But it is the defender of force in that way, too, because it's really hard to deal with. It tangles up the chainsaws. It rips up your flesh. And they're all connected. And so it's the defender of the force. It makes logging much more difficult where it grows. And, like, when you wildcraft them, you'll tug on one of them, and you'll see three or four neighboring ones start to go under. They're all connected underneath. And it's very much about that right use of power. It was used by the Northwest Natives, the Salish peoples. They would take the stems, which are, I mean, they are so covered in spines. I can't even convey how spiny these plants are. And they would weave them into sort of a conical hut shape, and the medicine man would sit inside that, and it would be his working to somehow make it out of that. And it's protective, and it's strong, and it imbues you with this fiery Mars sort of power that's not, it's not toxic masculinity, it's not aggressive, but it's strong and it's fiery. And it's an excellent herb for getting your fight back. You know, we were talking earlier about addictions, and it's an herb that's used a lot by herbalists up here for people that have been addicted to methamphetamine. Because it, you know, meth gives you this sort of false fire, this false power where you feel very strong and very energized and very good and all this stuff, but obviously it's not good for you. And Devil's Club relates to that energy. It gives you strength and power, but it helps you reclaim those bits of you that have been kind of beaten down, which tends to be what draws people to these false fires of stimulant drugs. They've been sort of beaten down, and they're trying to reclaim a more positive aspect of that. And Devil's Club is really nice for just reclaiming that inner fire and that inner strength. So that's one that I think
fire.
Of, that I think is a really great ally.
That's a great phrase.
Wait,
yeah, it's a phrase in Chinese medicine, false fire. It's an idea from Chinese medicine where, like, too much caffeine, too much sugar, stimulants that aren't tonics create this false fire that's actually empty behind it. And everybody, if you think about it, you know what that feels like. If you've been exhausted and you're like, I'm just going to have like four espressos to get through this day, that's what false fire feels like.
And they send you into a yin state. You're going to yang, and it's putting you into yin.
Well, it's really great. Mm-hmm. It's really great because the false fire of the mob mind, right? The false fire of hostility and vituperativeness. We go, that's a toxic mimic. That's not the real thing. That's great.
Yeah, and yeah, we're angry at each other because somebody has told us to, but maybe we don't even really feel that way. You know, maybe when we really examine ourselves, we're like, we have this fire because we just watched MSNBC or Fox News for an hour and got all fired up, but do I really feel that way about the people around me that just voted differently? I really don't. You know, it's a false fire.
Right. I think that
You go. Having Uranus go back into Mars is
Having Uranus going back into Aries is like another chance to revisit that, and it's going to be almost entirely in the last degree of Aries, which is kind of like the summation degree. So it really is a chance of a do-over, and there's a chance to re-examine the way that rage has been whipped up. I mean, there's just like, you know, these Trump rallies, and I've seen photos of people just in almost demonic states of wrath at those things, you know, and so it's just sort of like,
I know, and I can't feel very good.
The positive side of Aries is the knowledge of the self, but the way that this has been acted out is it's really training people to do this outer-directed raging, this frenzied thing, and so having Uranus go, the awakener, go back in that last degree of Aries and say, wait, look again. See, what are the outcomes of these states that you are, you know, so addictively being directed into? And for the positive side of Mars and of Aries, what I would put forward is confidence. You know, I mean, all these people who are addicted to meth, there is this, like, deficit. It is a false fire. They're seeking a fire. They don't know how to get at it, but they need to somehow, they want to defend themselves. They want to assert themselves. It's like this, there's the power to act. Is really the power of Mars, you know, and it's very interesting because I find for myself chocolate is an amazing plant that has that power, you know, as a sacred bean, right? It has this activating quality. I can get more stuff written and done on chocolate, you know, but you know there are things that are, you know, and it is entheogenic. It has theobromine in it, which is sort of like, you know, the bromide of the gods, right? There are, you know, we can affirm that basic sense of true self and of confidence and ability to act on the world as the cleared, renewed, restored, original nature of Mars and not the grabbing, aggressing, attacking mode.
Right. And what you said, Max, was that that can't feel good, right? Right. And I think, and so we want to restore everybody's adrenals. But then back to you, Max, you know, how what do you think of to weave with what Micah just said about positive Mars Yang? You know, the moon goes back into Scorpio, which is the detective, deep alchemist, you know, on election day, and Uranus back into Aries, the woofy thing. But how do you think of positive Yang?
Well, you know, the power to act out of love would be one way. You know,
right.
It's just like it's like there's drive and action, and I think that what has happened to many of us, many people, are in despair. They're frozen. They've been inactivated because these forces are operating at such powerful levels, and they don't feel like they have any power to affect reality. So really strongly, you know, having Uranus going back into Aries, there is that potential to say, wait a minute. I have the power to act. I can make a difference. I can do something, because you know we have to break out of that frozenness and that hopelessness, you know, and have the confidence to say and the faith to say we can do this differently. There's another way.
And we're going to all too soon. It's been a complete delight to cahoot with you both, beautiful Micah Nielsen again, Alchemy. .com, and a wonderful, wonderful Max Dashew. Let us all cahoot in perpetuity, suppressedhistories.net. And thanks very much to Erica Bridgman, wonderful, indefatigable board op. I'm Caroline Casey. We will reconvene next week. Thank you so much, team.